Okay, I don't know what was going on there, but I think I finally have it right. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Jacqueline. Gosh, I had my volume on my iPad at 100%. And I know Cheryl, you said you had your end at 100% in the beginning. I was really struggling to hear, and so I had to literally hold the iPad right up to my ear to take all of that in, and it was so worth it. God, in so many ways. I mean, I was wondering. I had been wondering. I've been looking at the pictures Anne's been posting, and I was wondering about the altitude, how you adjust to that, or whether you have to take medication of some sort, or, but you know, I think at one point they said there was something at like 16,000 feet, which, you know, that's pretty high. And so it doesn't surprise me that, you know, some sort of altitude sickness or some sort of sickness came on, and I was really impressed with the way that Anne chose to be with that. It seemed like a, you know, pretty intense situation. And it reminded me to share the good news. Oftentimes I notice that I'm more inclined to share bad news than good news, not just here in the sanctuary, but, you know, in general. And Anne kind of spoke to that too, where she was noticing gratitude, like gratitude missing maybe for all the days that things do go right. We do feel well when all that is absolutely fine and perfect. And so that was a reminder for me to share the good news, and that is that I got my CAT scan back and it was clear. So it supersedes whatever the X-ray revealed, and everything was hunky dory. So that is really good news. I have to say that for myself, I wasn't like so much. I didn't really feel any strong emotions around having that X-ray, or having that CAT scan. Or the abnormal results from the X-ray that led to the CAT scan. There was no real strong reaction to that. I did, you know, have the word cancer cross my mind. I guess because, well, for several reasons. I mean, it's part of the collective. And my sister-in-law, who has been a non-smoker her entire life, had a mammogram wherein they discovered she had lung cancer. My husband's family is kind of rife with cancer. And so the cancer word, you know, has been around in our space or in someone's life. My husband's side for as long as we've been together. So that thought did in fact cross my mind, but I didn't experience any like intense fear or anything like that around it. And it didn't play on my mind. And I waited like 2 weeks between the X-ray and then having the CAT scan and then another week to get the results. And I really feel grateful that there was not a lot of mental masturbation going on around that or fear. What I did notice, though, was some self-condemnation. It was just a bizarre thing to, I've been a smoker. I've smoked cigarettes, you know, in my 20s and 30s. Never a dedicated smoker, but definitely smoked cigarettes. I've smoked pot, more dedicated to pot than to cigarettes for sure. And so, you know, when you go into a doctor's office and they want to know your history, and my intention is to be honest And you, I don't know about you guys, but I don't really think it's a big deal. But when you reveal that, especially to a doctor, sometimes the reaction makes me want to laugh because it was almost like I felt like my dad was giving me the stink eye, you know, that kind of a thing. And I want to bust out laughing. Because there seems to be, I was just noticing the ways that we categorize what's acceptable. Like for instance, you know, alcohol seems to be more acceptable in circles than smoking pot. Pill, you know, you could splinter that kind of stuff in a million different ways. But what I've noticed is just my reaction to that and then going into guilt over smoking cigarettes, over smoking pot, and noticing that come up. And it's like, oh my God, I mean, the ways in which crucifixion happens on a daily basis when we listen to our thoughts is incredible. Today, I almost put a prayer request into prayer circle. I was so struggling with the bombardment of thought, mostly negative thought, in the surrounding politics, surrounding Donald Trump in particular, and my absolute hatred of him, and having those thoughts, like, just militantly stick in my awareness, even as I am noticing that. I mean, noticing those thoughts and having sensations, body sensations, knowing I'm also not the sensations, knowing I'm not the thoughts, knowing I'm not the hatred, but not in a direct experience sort of way. If it was a direct experience sort of way that I knew the truth of myself, who I really was, it may have been less painful than it was today. At one point, I thought, well, you know, I am trying to allow everything to be as it is. But it's weighing heavy on my mind, this noticing of criticism and hatred and condemnation of others, get it, others. You know, seeing the and experiencing, I mean, literally feeling it, where I found myself like trying to catch my breath today. It felt so heavy, the darkness. And I was aware of it. And just staying with that while asking, you know, for help to let it go, but not really feeling any sort of relief. What, you know, has been a challenge today. Today's been like a kind of a wonky kind of a day that way. And I'm just acknowledging that. So to hear Anne just sharing about her own challenges and remembering to return to her practices to, I've been shown like, external to myself, pieces of myself, obviously, because that's all I'm ever really looking at. I walk most every morning, and I met my new neighbor. She moved in maybe a week ago, and she is a widow. And we walk early in the morning, my husband and I, when he's in town. And so she was out front taking pictures of her new house in her house coat and in robe. And I'd met her once before. And then she left for Virginia, where she has another home. And so I asked, you know, I said, hello, Sunny. Her name is Sunny. And I said, "How's it going?" And she went off. I mean, that was like a loaded question that I didn't know was really loaded. She started complaining and just harumphing about everything. And my husband was started just like walking away. And you know, after I kind of got an earful of it, and she kind of went back in the house, and my husband and I reunited. I said to him, "You know, complaining is such an unattractive face, and I really feel grateful that." And my husband said, "Well, when I got a whiff of that, I just decided I'm not playing." And he said, "So I started to walk away." And I said, "I get it." And to be able to see the face of complaining in that instance, without condemnation, but just as that, like, "This is how this looks, Kathy. This is how you look, Kathy, when you complain, or when you criticize, or when you condemn. This is how this looks." And so I've had a lot of that going on as well. It's been you know, a real roller coaster of up and down. I'm moving again in approximately 2 weeks. That is weighing heavy on my mind. I would be a liar to say anything less. It's just, you know, and it's not far. We actually live in the neighborhood where we're building our home, so I walk there every day. It's just, you know, maybe a couple of miles, round trip, no less. And so it's not a long a long move, but it's a move again. And I'm like burned out with moving, and that's a belief I have. So I'm looking at these beliefs, these thoughts that aren't even me. Aren't even me. And I'm continually trying to remind myself that you are not these feelings. You are not these thoughts. You are not this condemnation. You are not this complaining. You are not this body. You are not any of this. You are not the circumstances. You are not the experiences. You're the awareness in which it's all occurring. And awareness allows everything, everything. Yeah. But yeah, definitely, I have not been allowing everything, that's for sure. Wanting things to be different politically, wanting family members to change their mind. Good one, huh? Wanting to be right, all of that. I mean, it all comes with the territory of judgment and listening to thinking and believing it to be meaningful. True, something, you know, something other than the crap that it really is, the nothingness that it really is. But today, the dark energy, I'll say, has been very strong. Yeah. And I just keep reminding myself, none of that. None of what you're aware of is you. You're the awareness. So with that, I'm going to first start with a prayer from NTI Acts chapter 1. It says, "Father, I do not know what is best for me now. Time and this place that I may be led back to you. Because I cannot see the path I am ready to walk, take my hand and send me your voice to guide me. I shall go where it asks me to go, and I shall do as it asks me to do in joy and peace and certainty. I will trust. And the second piece of that is again from Acts down the road a bit in chapter 26. And it says, you can always decide, you must remember, and then you can always decide in each circumstance and every situation along the way to me. I am there with you, offering help and guidance. Never am I not there. Never can you make a mistake that will drive me away. But it is also true that you can only hear my word and accept my help if you are willing to see that the answer to all things is me. If you choose to limit the circumstances in which I may help, my help is limited. If you choose to solve your problems on your own, my answer remains unheard. Always, I am with you, able to help. Always, without exception, I am there. But you must be willing to know me and accept me in order to receive me as yours. Amen. I find that very reassuring. Okay. So we are reading. I have been reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul for, gosh, a long, long time now. It still feels new. I still love it. It's a joyful path to self-realization that Michael Langford gifted us with, and he took all the direct path quotes from seven sages, mystics, Christian mystics. And we've been reading from chapter 7, Elise Morgan. And I believe I'm on page 255, if you have the book, Experience Your Perfect Soul, and want to follow along. I'm about halfway down, starting on a new section called Oneness. Oneness. There is no room for separate, fearsome thoughts. Fearsome. There is no room for separate, fearsome thoughts. Oneness expels fear, doubt, apprehension. I am ever with you, ever back of you. Ever in you. Ever back of you. I stopped there because some sharing I did yesterday from my thoughts of contemplation talked about the background of awareness and the foreground of awareness. And intellectually, I get that they're the same, it's the same, there's only one awareness. But it helps me at the stage that I'm at to think of true awareness, pure awareness, as the background of awareness, that which never changes and allows everything to be exactly as it is, in which everything exists. Whereas the foreground of awareness seems like the external focus, the outside world. And so the way this speaks of it, I am ever with you, ever back of you, ever in you. It feels, at least in my experience, like still. I get very caught in what's going on external, in an external world. Objects, things, stuff. Sometimes it's very distracting. And sometimes not, you know. So I am ever with you, ever back of you, ever in you. When you definitely begin to overcome fixed ideas, recurring thoughts of fear, you will hear me in your soul telling you, oneness reigns, oneness reigns, oneness reigns. I love when things are said in threes. Last week we would I was told through some of this reading, you know, receive, receive, receive. And that's the way my remembrance of it comes back to me that way. And just the repetition of it three times as opposed to once helps me to solidify and drop more into a receptive state. Receive, you know, you receive when you're in quiet. And it talks about recurring thoughts of fear. I had spoken a few weeks back about the idea of giving over my nighttime sleep to Holy Spirit with a intent. I mean, setting that intent as I was about to go off to sleep, that, you know, please use this time for, you know, it's such a big chunk of time. Please use this time for my healing, for, you know, reaching me in a way where my mind might be more in a quiet space, that I might be more receptive. So, you know, please, you know, use this time as an opportunity. And what's been happening is that I've been dreaming more, but very anxiety-driven dreams. Generally, the theme around it is I can't find something. Like it's an, you know, just impossible to make my way out of a situation, like a building or a space, like just not being and being very anxious about it. So wait, I notice that upon waking in the morning, if it feels like it's fairly fresh, I don't generally remember like full details of these dreams, but I do notice leftover sensations within the body. And I've had to remind myself again, this, you are not your sensations. As strong as they may feel, as anxiety prone as, you know, you might be experiencing the tension in your neck or your back or your shoulders, you're clenching your jaw when you wake up, whatever it might be, you're not those sensations and you're not that body. Those are just very strong indicators, to turn within. To ask to see this differently, to know you're not ever lost, to return to the space of truth. And sometimes I notice just noticing that dream there's a subtle habitual tendency to want to start off my morning in a pissy sort of mood then, like, God, I don't want to have these anxiety-driven dreams. I already feel anxious enough, just in this present situation with the moving coming up and just the whole rigmarole of that, and all that goes along with it. And then you go to dream, have a dream at night, and it's kind of the same. But what else would it be? I mean. It makes sense, but yet I know that that's not the only possibility within the infinite possibilities that do occur. So I want to choose differently. So one more time on that paragraph. I am ever with you, ever back of you, ever in you. When you definitely begin to overcome fixed ideas, recurring thoughts of fear, you will hear me in your soul telling you, oneness reigns, oneness reigns, oneness reigns. Know that you are one with me. Vitally alive, strong, and peaceful, always peaceful, content, always content. And when I read that, like something like I just read, it's speaking again to the truth of who I am. It's not trying to convince Kathy of her truth. There is no truth to Kathy. Only the truth is true, and nothing else is true. And that's why this is so uplifting. Know that you are one with me, vitally alive, strong, and peaceful, always peaceful, content, always content. That's oneness. Let me grab a drink of water. Way of joy. Be still. Frequently. Be joyous in your stillness. Be joyous in all your being. Joyous. Continually joyous. Rise in joy. Sleep in joy. Breathe in joy. The hour of understanding is at hand. Light shines as the soul looks to me, as the heart loves me, as the mind accepts me. Move on without one backward thought. Enter the timeless now. Sit still and receive the divine blessing. That's the way of joy. Move on without one backward thought. Enter the timeless now. Sometimes the word backward can refer to the past, but also the idea of ass backwards, up completely upside down. That's all thought is. It's the great imposter posing as something when it's really nothing. The timeless now. Expressed as words, expressed as a concept of some sort, has never been a thought. It's not a state that I can comprehend being absolutely thoughtless, and I don't have to. Nor could I, because I don't know. But the direction is move on without one backward thought. So when I find myself looking at something upside down, I can recognize, hey, you lost your way, the way of joy, just for a moment, and you can turn back now. Or I find myself ruminating about, a grievance from the past, or something that was said yesterday that pissed me off, or, all that garbage. Those are backward thoughts as well. They have nothing to do with the timeless now, where no such thing as a grievance exists in truth. Love only knows itself as itself. And that's why this is asking us to move on, enter the timeless now, sit still, and receive the divine blessing. Receive the divine blessing. Nice. That was really nice. Okay, this next piece, which is only 3 lines long, is called On Meditation. Lessen the sense of work and of continued repetition during your hour of meditation. Lessen the sense of work and of continued repetition during your hour of meditation. Continued repetition. I'm not sure I understand that. Repetition of what? Lessen the sense of work. Like this is a job, I'm sitting down, like, this is work to meditate. And of continued repetition, like I'm not really sure what that means. Continued repetition, like maybe saying a mantra or something during your meditation. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know because I don't have. I don't really feel like I, in Karen's meditations. I don't sense any continued repetition, instruction, nor do I find myself repeating like a mantra in my mind at all. It's no, it feels just more like a sense of floating or quiet or and if I notice the intrusion of thoughts, just returning my attention back to awareness. Resting, not working. Yeah, Karen. Yeah. It does. It feels like rest to me, so I actually look forward to it. So again, but in yeah, lessen the sense of work and of continued repetition during your hour of meditation. And that was it on meditation. The next piece, though, is called Be Free. Enter the forest of content and rest under the tree of solitude. Look up through the branches into the blazing light and be free. Yeah. That's more how the meditation feels. Regina, I used to listen to some of Regina's meditations, and there was one particular series, and I can't even remember. It's been a while now, since I've listened to those, but there was music that would be playing, and it was like jungle sounds, and it just that what the stream of water and like the sounds of jungles and birds and. I always found that so soothing and so calming. And I don't really know who speaks to this. I don't know if it was in Karen's meditations or what, but just that notion of becoming the tree. The tree isn't going to be anything other than itself, no matter if it rains or snows or gets, hit by a dump truck or gets peed on by a dog. It's just going to be a tree taking everything in stride. And so, when he, I think it was a he, talked about that, it was like, or a flower, if you want to think of yourself as a flower. Just that idea of just acceptance of what is. It's, not a trunk and not the leaf structure and not the branches. It's awareness appearing as a tree. So again, enter the forest of content and rest under the tree of solitude. Look up through the branches into the blazing light and be free. Man centered in divine love embodies the substance of immortality. Show me the knowledge of eternal, limitless infinity. Show me the knowledge of eternal, limitless infinity. And to that I say, Amen. That's the be free section. The inflowing tide. Now is the acceptable hour of grace. The spirit of immortal life is flowing forth. Rise and swim on the inflowing tide. Willingly give all to me. Empty yourself and you will be filled. Be still and dwell on life for a time. Be still and dwell on love for a time. Be still and dwell on light for a time. Then unite life, love, and light. Life is joy. Complete joy. Life is love. Unending love. Life is light. Infinite light. And again, just self-honesty here on my part, the three words that complete, unending, and infinite is my life complete joy? Is my love unending love? Is my light an infinite light? Or does it seem dim sometimes? Does my love seem contracted? I don't seem to love Donald Trump as much as I love my husband. I don't seem to love Sarah Sanders as much as I love my dog. Having a toothache doesn't feel completely joyous. Some days feel kind of dark. And I realized, as I say these things, that again, they're referencing the false self. So when I find myself, you know, latching onto those particular words and asking, is that my experience? I can be honest and say it is not my experience, that I experience complete joy, unending love, and infinite love as Kathy. That would be an accurate statement to say that that seems to be the case. Am I Kathy? Is that true of who I really am? Yeah. So when I find that initial like Velcro, kind of that Velcro feeling where it's like, well, that's not your experience, Kathy. That voice that's like saying, hey, you know, don't try to pull the wool over somebody's eyes and act like, oh, you're completely joyful and you just have this bubbling love for everybody and you never have dark days. And yeah, no, that doesn't work for me to, you know, pretend in that way. But that's not even who I am. That's just that series of what were referred to on the page before as, you know, those backward thoughts. Not only are they, they're just false, plain and simple, every single one of them. They were add-ons, not even the truth of who you were ever learned, false learning. Yeah. And so again, it's that opportunity to rather than, you know, beating myself with, oh my God, here you go again, referring to me, I, Kathy. So what? You notice it now more often and you can let that go and not think anything of it. It's not even who you are. Return to who you are every single time. Same thing, like I was saying about going to the doctor's office and, hearing that you had a couple of spots on your lung and just noticing that guilt of, smoking. Is that who I am? So many opportunities every single day when we pay attention to, the busy mind, the thought mind, and what flows through the mind and the resulting feelings and body sensations. And I've enjoyed Karen's meditations very much that get us in touch with where is the constriction? Where is your constriction when you notice a hate thought? Where are you experiencing it? And see how we store maybe the denied thoughts, maybe the unconscious thoughts, maybe the we're fully aware that we're just in a hateful, pissy mood, and we just, want to lash out and, call Donald Trump whatever we want to call Donald Trump at the moment. Notice where the constriction is in the body, how it feels. Not in a condemnation sort of a way, but, just again, as another one of those clues where it's like, hey, you're out of alignment. You're aligning with the darkness rather than the light. Be aware of that. And instead, we're told that life is joy, complete joy. Life is love, unending love, and life is light, infinite light. That's the truth. So the next piece is called the uniting essence. Some water again. Yeah, I see Cheryl put on the board. Do I want to have a relationship with this thought? That's such a good question. Do I want to have a relationship with this thought? And one of the ways, if you're not sure, one of the ways you can determine that is how do I feel? How do I feel? And if you feel loving and joyous and infinitely lit up with love, great. You're probably connected to the true self. And if you don't, you might have some, observation, some work to do, some letting go, some resting, accepting, trusting. So the next piece is called the uniting essence. Enter the secret place of the Most High and unite with love and truth. Love is fearless. I guess I kind of chuckle because enter the secret place of the Most High. It almost sounds like some fairy tale sort of a calling, that's how my mind wanted to interpret that. Something out of, I don't know. Princess Buttercup. Enter the secret place of the Most High and unite with love and truth. Love is fearless, strong, and free. There is no weakness, no vanity, no flattery in love. Love is the holy receptacle of truth. Love is the uniting essence of life. Yeah. Again, enter the secret place of the Most High and unite with love and truth. Love is fearless, strong, and free. There is no weakness, no vanity, no flattery in love. Love is the holy receptacle of truth. Love is the uniting essence of life. Yeah, no vanity. Not quite there yet. No flattery. It's and again, all of those things are in relation to who does that speak of? Is awareness vain? Does awareness desire to be flattered in some way, shape, or form? Is awareness weak in some way? And that's why we're told love isn't weak, love isn't vain, love doesn't desire any sort of flattery or flatter. What would there be to flatter? And who is it that would flatter? Who is it that's concerned with how they look, how someone else looks, what someone else thinks? And yet we all experience, I would say, weakness, vanity, flattery, or have engaged in, continue to engage in those things, notice those things, indulge those things. Yeah. All fearful. Yeah. Self-love, Karen says. Self-love is the only flattery I can see in love. Yeah. It reminds me again of number 88, most direct means to eternal bliss. Your true self deserves your attention. Flatter your true self by turning your attention within to yourself, the one that's fearless, strong, and free, not the one that's weak and is vain and needs some sort of external approval. What safety lies there? That's not loving ourself. That's simply being disconnected from the truth of who you are and return the mind again within. I am not that. I am not weak. I am not vain. I need no flattery, nor do I need to flatter, because I am love. Love has no needs, no wants, no cares, none of that. Love only knows itself in love. In this line, love is the holy receptacle of truth. My Catholic upbringing, it always reminds me of that, when certain times of the year when they do the incense thing, Oh no, maybe I got that mixed up. Never mind. It the little tabernacle thing that they used to put the communion in. You know, like that was some kind of special gold box. I was always fascinated by that thing when I was a kid. Of course, there were no such things as altar girls then, so it was just the altar boys that kind of got to see the inside of that box. But I knew it was empty, but somehow it felt like there was something special in there. So this word receptacle, holy receptacle of truth, just brought that little memory back up in my mind. Yeah, like somehow the chalice that held the communion was, I don't know, special in some way, shape, or form. And they'd kind of like clean that thing out after they served the wine or the communion and, you know, buff it up and then kind of sit it in that tabernacle thing. And then they'd like lock it like it was some secret place of the Most High. So it's funny the old meaning I have around and can visualize and recall from a past that doesn't exist, but at least it made me laugh. It's just funny stuff. Yeah, blessing me with holy water, sprinkling people with holy water. Oh my gosh. I can laugh about so many things now. It's just like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh. Thank goodness that love is the uniting essence of life. Only love. Yeah. All the rest of it is nonsense. Nonsense. Oh God. Thank God I can laugh at it now. Okay, so I'm still laughing about it. I'll just tell you guys a funny one. We'll end with something funny. When I was a kid, I went to Catholic school, so I had to go to church before class 5 days a week, and then we went to church on Sunday. So I went to church 6 days a week, and the service during the week before school wasn't very long, maybe a half hour long. But you know, still, it was such a boring thing at a point where, just the monotony of it was incredible. So I would invent like mantras that I would make up in my mind, and I talked to Jesus in my own way, and really not pay too much attention to what was going on. And one time, the priest dropped he dropped the chalice that had the communion in it, and so. It was like a big deal, because then he had to get this like holy water or something, I don't know. And every spot that the host landed, he had to wipe it with this water. And it was one of those things as a kid where you're like mortified for the priest, but you're like, cool, something different happened today. Yeah, and he was mortified. He turned beet red. Yeah, but it's just one of those. Oh yeah, maybe like yeah, the continued repetition, exactly. Where Jesus, you just really don't. Everything's boring and stale. Yet you know in your heart that you want to talk to God. You want to be with God, but you just don't want to say these same stupid Latin words, no less. Over and over and over again, and not have that sense of joy in your heart. So I had to find the joy in my own way. And that particular day, him dropping that most sacred of chalices onto the floor with all those sacred communions in it, and the amusement I got over, watching him just kind of bend over and pick all that up and be like totally ashamed about it. It made me laugh. Then and it made me laugh now. So at any rate, guys, my time is up. I'll talk to you soon, and thanks for being here with me.